Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, and good morning to you. Spring has sprung. We haven't talked to you since it was winter last week. And then we got some teasing of sunshine last weekend. And
yeah,
now it's
last weekend
rain.
Did not feel like winter.
Not at all. No.
Today, a different story.
A little bit different story. So hopefully you got out in your yard and got some things planted because they'll get lots of rain over the next few days. So
yes,
I did that.
Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. I got my tulips and daffodils popping up.
Now, I was thinking that the rain will probably wash away all the cherry blossoms, won't it?
I hope not. Now, sometimes if it's really windy, that'll happen. If it's just light rain, we'll see.
All right. But we'll see if this arrived this weekend. Yeah.
Yes, because the Cherry Blossom Festival, I know, happens, well, in Vancouver. That's a big area, Vancouver, BC, for them to have
really?
The Cherry Blossom Festival. And that doesn't even start until next week.
Ah.
And it's like, but all the cherry blossoms bloomed 2 weeks ago, so
yeah, they did.
Yeah, so
but you can sweep them up on the ground, put them in a pile, and everybody can go ooh and ah with a pile of cherry blossoms on the corner,
and then throw them up and
yeah, the children can roll in them, you know, and cover them, bury each other in cherry blossoms. I don't know.
Yeah, I grew up
on the
farm.
Trees.
I do too, and I like driving underneath and seeing all those, and oh, so beautiful. So we are here, Leading Edge Medicine. With a nice clear signal. We are very excited about that. Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio, Dr. Samira Umat. And wow, let me go ahead and give the phone number because we had a lot of calls last week.
We did.
And a couple we couldn't get to. So if you tried to get through last week with your questions, let me give you that number and you can be first in our caller queue. Here's the number. It's 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770 with your questions for the doctors about whatever is ailing you or whatever is aging you.
That's right.
And causing issues or symptoms.
Time is aging.
That's right. Yeah, what's going on? So while we're waiting for that first call, 800-465-8770, let's find out what is going on in medical news, Dr. Mixon.
Well, first, I'm going to digress to the cherry blossoms for just a minute.
Okay, let's do that.
Because I actually, it's to the daffodils.
Ooh.
Because I had heard, you know, last Saturday somebody called in and said the daffodils are great, but, you know, he doesn't want to go because of all the traffic.
That's right, our caller from
and you two were just talking about the long traffic when you went to see the daffodils.
Yes.
And it's odd because we went last Sunday and had no traffic at all.
Really?
We just drove there on empty roads. We got to the daffodil farm.
Oh, boy.
There was lots and lots of room in the parking lot. Mm. We walked out. There were maybe half a dozen couples out in the daffodil fields.
Oh,
and where was everybody?
We had it, I don't know, but we pretty much had the joint to ourselves. So, you know, I don't know about everybody else complaining about traffic. Because we did not get any traffic when we went to see the daffodils last Sunday.
So, wow. Okay. Well, Dr. Mixon got to see him. And did you
take lots of pictures?
Yeah, romp in the fields.
Well, no, they say they don't want you to go out between the rows and stuff.
That's true.
Although there was one little Asian boy running up and down the rows and having a great time, and we just said, yeah, go have fun.
Go have fun.
No, he's not doing anything any harm. It's just,
yeah, he's in the big ditch area
there. Well, you know, he weighs all of 40 pounds or something. Tiny little kid running up and down in the mud. Hey, so what?
There you go. So we don't have any pictures of Dr. Mixon wearing his cool hat.
No, you don't have
fedora.
Nothing of me laying, you know, passed out in the middle of the daffodil field or something. But it was nice. Anyway, had an interesting study in medicine here that I thought was kind of an international study between Israel, Britain, and Rutgers University here in the United States. And they were looking at patterns of fat and cognition.
Okay.
Because we have known for some time that higher BMI, mm-hmm. which roughly, but not very precisely, correlates with body fat. Higher your BMI, the higher your risk of Alzheimer's, dementia, and lower overall cognition. But they kind of broke it down by looking at where the fat deposits were by gender, but also by body part. And what they found was that in men, intra-abdominal fat was the greatest predictor.
Right.
So if fat around your liver, bile ducts, fat around your pancreas, very, very strongly correlated with lower cognitive scores.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, women, it was fat in general. So it didn't matter where a woman's fat was. So if a woman is overweight, it will correlate pretty highly with lower cognition. With men, it wasn't so much the fat on their butt and thighs, it was the fat inside their belly. You know, we always worry about visceral fat.
Right.
But it turns out, at least in this study, that that's a better predictor in men than in women.
Right.
And in women, fat anywhere.
So it didn't matter.
Okay.
It didn't matter.
It's
just
a total body fat percentage.
Total body fat on the woman.
Yeah.
But on the man, primarily visceral fat.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good to know. Yeah.
Well, what's the difference between the fat that's kind of squishy on your tummy or the fat that's like hard as a rock? Because some people are, you know, they got the tummy thing going, but it's hard.
Yeah, but that's almost never fat that's hard as a rock. What's going on with most of those people is they have a lot of fat inside their belly. That's visceral fat.
Okay.
And it's underneath the muscles. And it's pushing the abdominal muscles out and stretching them tight. What you're actually feeling is a skin, a fairly thick fat pad, an inch or two or three deep. But then you've got all that abdominal muscles that are being pushed out and stretched hard by all the fat inside the belly. And that is the most dangerous fat you've got.
Okay.
So the people that have a big, hard belly.
Yes.
They probably have a whole lot of visceral fat and are very high risk of dementia.
Okay. Ooh, not good.
Yeah.
All right. I always wondered that.
Yeah, the fat that you can kind of pinch on the skin, that is more superficial. And that way, you know, will respond to our sculpture and other treatments that we have in the clinics. Right. And that will help reduce that. That's subcutaneous fat and less dangerous than the visceral fat is what the study showed.
Okay.
We kind of intuitively knew that too, right?
Yeah. It's just that we were looking at visceral fat for men and women.
Yeah.
And it turns out that in women, it's total fat, no matter where it is.
Okay.
And in men, the visceral fat was just significantly more dangerous than it was for women.
Right, right. And you know, with the new the semaglutides, the GLP-1 agonists, they're going to change the dynamics over here a little bit. And people who have not been able to lose weight will definitely lose weight. But in our practice, what we are finding is that many people will lose muscle as well.
Yes.
And that we know. We know that every time you lose weight, a percentage of that is going to be muscle loss and a percentage will be body fat. Unfortunately, most people tend to lose more muscle and then they lose less fat. And that just slows down the metabolic pathways.
Well, and it makes them tired.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of that is not hunger that's making them tired. They're actually destroying their muscle mass. And less muscle means more fatigue. You know, you can't do as much because you have less functioning muscle.
Also, you know, the calorie restriction in and of itself is also stressful to the body. You can tolerate it for a while, but after a while the body's cortisol levels are going to rise and you will go into fatigue mode just because calories are restricted so much and the body needs the caloric intake for function. So the body's metabolic pathways will slow down, saying, okay, not not enough coming in, we got to shut down things because we got to conserve energy.
Sure. The body doesn't know you're dieting. It thinks you're starving.
Yeah.
You know, it is, your body assumes that if there's food available, you're eating.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think and this is a little analogy I've given many times before, but I'm going to do it again this morning just because not everybody is going to remember it. But we are genetically coded mm-hmm. to eat as much as we can whenever it's available. And that's a holdover from our ancestors back before agriculture, before we had farms and grocery stores, etc. food was in rich supply in the summer and fall. And so our ancestors would eat everything available in summer and fall, and they'd gain as much weight as possible because winter was coming. And in the winter, food was going to be in very short supply. And so people who went into winter skinny died and did not reproduce. And those who went into winter fat survived so that they could get pregnant and have babies again the next year. And what we did by that sort of natural selection is the chubbies inherited the earth. The skinnies died, and the chubbies inherited the earth. So those people that were genetically coded to eat everything in sight whenever it was available, those are our ancestors. We carry their genome. Mm-hmm. We are genetically coded. If there is high-calorie, rich, sweet, tasty food available, our body, our brain said, eat, so that you'll survive. Mm-hmm. You know, what was a survival trait for our ancestors is killing us and making us demented today. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to recognize, no, it is not a moral failing. What you're really doing is you're doing what your genome is telling you to do. You're doing the, quote, normal, natural thing. It's just that today we have an unending supply of high-calorie, high-fat foods available.
All the time.
And so if we listen to what our bodies are telling us to do, we will become massively obese.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in the past, remember, our life expectancy was much shorter than it is today. And so that plays into it, too. Mm. We didn't live that long. You reproduced, and then if you survived childbearing, you lived for another few years, and then you died.
Yes.
But now we're wanting to live longer, but the genome is saying save, 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 and we're saying there's plenty to eat.
That's right, yeah. So, you know, this is, being overweight is not a moral failing. It is, unfortunately, what was for our ancestors a survival trait, but it is destructive for us today. When we tell people to eat less than their body is craving, we are asking them to do an inherently unnatural act. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just is. And that is why doctors have for decades failed miserably at getting people to get lean and fit. You know, I mean, statistically, when people lose significant amount of weight, 3% of them keep it off a year.
Right.
And that's why the new injections, the semaglutide and the similar drugs, the GLP agonists, these drugs are they're a revolution because now all of a sudden you don't have the cravings to eat so much. The cravings go away. You fool your body into thinking you've got plenty. You don't need any more.
Right. Yeah. Right. But also, you know, Jerry, the school of thought about how we made recommendations in the 70s and 80s about eating carbohydrate-rich food and not fats. You know, it was fat was don't eat fat.
Yes,
and eat hard.
Yeah. And, of course, then they loaded the low-fat foods with enormous amounts of sugar.
Yeah.
So you would eat them.
Right.
Because we find fat tasty.
That's right.
Who doesn't love bacon?
Yeah,
come on.
That's right, yes. And all the sugar-coated foods that we were told to eat, the cereals and the grains, and they made it more appealing and appetizing, and then you craved more of it.
Yes.
So a lot of complicating factors were at play here.
But nevertheless, it is important to get the fat off.
Yeah.
You know, because that is the single most thing. America is the fattest industrialized nation on earth, and we are the only industrialized nation on earth in which the lifespan is dropping.
Ugh.
And the lifespan in America is dropping because we're too damn fat. That's just all there is to it.
There you go. All right, talking about fat and calories and why it's bad for you, and we want you to do something about it on today's Leading Edge Medicine, and of course, talking about what you would like to talk about. Joe, Eileen, we're going to get to your calls in just a moment, and if you have a question, give us a call at 800-465-8770. Leading Edge Medicine, we'll be right back. Stay right there.
Actually, I drive a Tesla, which is dead quiet, 1,200 horsepower with silence.
Silence.
And I love leaving those $300,000 fancy cars in my dust.
You were sitting in the car in the parking lot the other day, and I was walking behind you to go to my car, and I said, I can't even hear if he's on. Does he see me?
Yes.
I run. Some of you, I run.
Oh, man. Eat my dust.
That's right.
All right. It is Leading Edge Medicine taking your calls today at 800-465-8770. Dr. Samira Umat in the studio. Also, Dr. Jerry Mixon. We're going to head to Chehalis now and talk with Joe. Hi, Joe. You had a question about your dad.
Hello, Joe.
Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. Yes, I do. I have an 89-year-old father. Well, actually, he's going to be 89 shortly. And he's got his mind. He's sharp as a tack. But his strength in his legs is leaving him. And so he's got the old man shuffle going on.
Yep.
And would your program at his age benefit him?
Probably, if he'll follow instructions. Some people do, some people don't. Let me tell you about my oldest patient that I personally treated. We've had several hundred-year-olds in our clinic now, but back when I was first getting started, I had a woman come in who was 98 years old.
Oh, I love this story.
And she started off wrong, on the wrong foot, because she lied to her doctor. She claimed to only be 93. And I had to explain to her that, lying to your doctor is a sin.
Yes.
That my MD stands for minor deity, and you cannot lie to me. Besides, I can do basic math, and I had her birth date.
Oh, so, yes. Oops.
But she was really kind of sad. It took her several minutes to slowly work her way across the exam room on her walker, barely able to move. And she wanted to actually get on my program. And I could tell from the way she was dressed and so on, she was a woman of very limited means. And I told her, I said, I've never treated a 98-year-old before. Now, we have now, but in those days we had not. And I said, I'm not sure how much help I can give, and I don't want to take your money if I can't help you. Mm. But her answer put me in my place. She said, Doctor, I'm dying. I feel like I'm encased in concrete. I can't move. And when I die, someone else is going to spend whatever I've got left. So why don't I go ahead and spend it and see if I can get better? And so I didn't know exactly how to respond to that, except, okay, I'll keep the cost as low as I can, and we'll go to work. We put her on a program, and she went after it with a vengeance because she felt she was dying. It took us a while. It took me 6 to 9 months to get her off the walker. But we got her off the walker and walking. Wow. In a year, we had her walking a quarter mile twice a day for exercise without a walker. I carried a cane to beat the dogs with. and over the course of the next couple of years, she got better and better. She was out going to the mall again, visiting with her grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She died at 103. We didn't make her live forever, but she did better. And I just got reminded here. When she was 101, she came in to me one day and gave me palpitations by telling me that she had just mowed her lawn. Now, the idea of a 101-year-old woman
out there mowing
her own lawn just scares the bejabbers out of me. But She was quite proud. And I told her, I said, I hope this was a tiny lawn, and I hope you used one of those mowers that pulled you so you didn't have to push it.
Yes.
But, you know, reality is we can help almost anybody that really wants help. Now, we can't.
Well,
we did not get her running up the stairs. We did not get her, you know, out on the trail doing, you know, 5K runs or anything. But we got her dramatically improved from where she was.
Mm-hmm.
Is the program difficult to stay on task? I mean,
it shouldn't
there's
be.
So much.
You know, it shouldn't be. Yeah. I mean, hormone manipulation is part of it, and that's, you know, 2 or 3 minutes a day. You know, you put your creams on and take your pills twice a day, or your creams once a day and wash them off in the evening. You put your, take your pills usually twice a day. You know, the biggest things are if we can shift your metabolism towards muscle and away from fat.
Right.
That if you can shift your diet a bit,
right,
and do as much exercise each day as you are capable of doing. And, you know, my rule with exercise is you do what you can do without pain.
Mm.
Pain is nature's way of saying don't. So listen to Mother Nature and, you know, but stay as physically active as you can. What'll happen is, with the hormonal shifts, we'll shift your metabolism away from fat towards muscle, and you will get stronger, and that will allow you to do more. And then by doing more, you'll get stronger yet, and we'll use that to let you do even more. So over time, we build on successes. But, you know, it's not a week or a month in and out program. It's a continuing program. We see our patients 4 or 5 times the first year and an hour at every visit. Subsequent years, maybe 4 times a year. So we have to keep reevaluating, see where we are, make adjustments, bring you back, reevaluate. Yeah.
I've been on your program, and I know it works. I mean, I went from pushing 90 pounds on a particular machine to 250 pounds in probably 3 months. But but that was at my age, and I'm just wondering, really trying to figure out how long any kind of, you know, benefits would show on him.
Sure. Well, he ought to be seen. You know, men are relatively simple creatures compared to women. I know that's not socially acceptable because we're all supposed to be the same, but we aren't. Men and women are radically different creatures.
Well, let's put it this way. It's easier to treat a man than it is to treat a woman.
It is.
Oh,
it
okay.
is. We are pretty much, you know, push button, off on switches. Women have a whole lot of dials we have to kind of adjust.
So, and levers.
But yeah, the average guy will feel the impact pretty quickly. Now, at his age, pretty quickly, maybe 3 or 4 months, you know. In a younger man, it's, you know, it tends to be real fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hang on a second. Somebody's ringing my phone trying to sell me something.
There
go away.
Go.
I love this. Political call, it says.
Oh, nice.
I don't want to talk to you. So let me turn the ringer off. So, yeah, we can almost certainly help dad, you know, and relatively fast just because he's male. I said 3 or 4 months, he ought to start seeing some distinct differences and feeling differently. And the biggest thing he'll feel is more self-confident and less depressed.
Okay.
You know, depression is a normal part of aging. Mm. People don't seem to realize that. But when you get old, the elderly curmudgeon is a stereotype for a reason. And the reason is it's usually true.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, when you're old and you're frightened by the world, when those low anabolic hormone levels make you afraid of everything, when something different or change comes about, you have two reactions. You can either withdraw and try to avoid it or have an angry outburst because it scared you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's very, very common in elderly people. And by changing their brain chemistry, by giving them back their self-confidence, their drive, their ambition, we can alleviate much of that. Mm. So we'll often see emotional and mental changes before the muscles, the bones, the ligaments have actually had time to respond.
Fascinating.
So hopefully that answers some of your questions.
Well, it does. I'm trying to convince them to do this. And I think all that you just said is going to help. And I hope to get them in your office.
Okay. So, I hope you do, too. I'd love to help.
Yes.
You know, I have to comment, Jerry.
You're welcome, sir.
Intuitively, we know this. I know this, right? But you have put it so beautifully today that it makes a lot of sense for somebody at the other end wondering, is this good for dad or not? So yeah. Nicely done, Jerry.
Well, very thank good. You, ma'am.
All right. Well, let's head to Lacey, not too far from Chehalis. We have Eileen on the line. Good morning, Eileen. Welcome to the show.
How y'all doing?
Doing good.
Listen, if the scoundrels in charge find out how good we feel, they are going to tax it. So let's keep it a secret, shall we?
Not even go there.
That's right.
Go there. Okay.
How can we help you?
My question is about my osteoporosis and my many other multiple medical problems.
Okay.
I was told in the 40s, I was already osteopenic in my 40s. I worked in the cath lab at Overlake Hospital, running around in lead all the time, and up and down the halls of the hospital. And so I've been taking calcium and vitamin D all these years. My husband and I lived in Lower Juanita, so we were patients at your clinic. In 2006-07, right before we moved down here to Lacey for 1 year. But I also started getting breast cancers 2000 and then 2012 and then 2019, which were kind of problematic about the hormone replacement. But recently, my osteoporosis is really a problem, and they have put me with a provider who specializes in this. And she is advising me to take a new drug called Evenity. And I'd like to know, what about the heart attack and stroke risk there? Because I also have been being evaluated and assessed for heart failure this past winter. Mm. And we don't even know why. I've had nuclear stress test, which says... I know I'm a heart nurse, so and it's really problematic because the big issue with Evenity is a few heart attacks and strokes in the clinical trials. And so what do you know about it, and how should I approach it?
Okay, well, for one thing, there is a direct correlation between testosterone load and congestive heart failure. And that's big reason that women get it far more commonly than men, because you guys start off with about 1/12 of our testosterone load when you're young. The problem is that when you hit your 40s, you've dropped even your modest level by 2/3 or so. And by the time you're 50, it's down about 85%. So that testosterone stimulates the osteoblast, the cells that make new bone. Estrogen inhibits the loss of bone by inhibiting the osteoclast, the cells that dissolve bone.
Okay?
So you're both making bone slower and dissolving it faster, because you don't have the estrogen to inhibit the osteoclast, and you don't have the testosterone to stimulate the osteoblast. Interestingly, what we now know is that testosterone load decreases the occurrence, the risk of getting breast cancer. And with many hormonally sensitive breast cancers, it actually shrinks the cancers. So we've got some newer studies now, because everybody used to be afraid of all hormones in breast cancer, that basically show that we can not only help to prevent the spread of breast cancers, but we can drop the risk of breast cancer by about 85%, which is really pretty dramatic. In women that are previous breast cancer folks and that currently are under control, putting them on an aromatase inhibitor to prevent the conversion of testosterone into the estradiol in the tumor, and providing them with the testosterone to be an anti-breast cancer drug. At the same time, it stimulates those bones to make new bone a whole lot faster. Now, we can't yeah. give you a lot of estrogen to slow the dissolving bone, but we can at least help you to make it faster. And so, you know, that's at least half of the formula we're still able to use. So there's things we can do. Mm-hmm. I would love to have a chance to, at least, since you're a cardiac nurse, show you some of the papers, and you might decide you want to get something done about it again.
Well, I just need to know the heart attack risk and the stroke yeah. risk for this, if you know anything about that.
Well,
because
okay, we've got a little break. We got the music yeah. going, but we'll chat okay. a little bit yeah. about the increased heart attack risk with the newer drugs after all.
Yep, okay? Stay right there, Eileen. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine in a moment. We're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. And good morning. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. It's Leading Edge Medicine. We've been talking with Eileen about different drugs and interactions and what can be done and yeah. what's going on. Yeah.
Eileen, yeah. Dr. Umat is going to give you the numbers.
Right.
Because there have been two studies, studies.
I do have one extra little thing. I have a newly found kidney cancer, renal cell carcinoma. And we are in a specialist desert down here. And my oncologist has referred me to Swedish up there to see James Porter. And it's a small one, and it seems to be in the center and maybe able to be radio frequency ablated. But anyway, that's just a whole nother thing in the mix.
Oh, it certainly is. Well, and you know, this is a not uncommon occurrence.
People who
get one cancer get other cancers. Because that first cancer told us your immune system was not very good at finding and killing things it should. And so, yep, it missed another one, darn it.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So specifically with regards to the side effects of the drug, there are several other than cardiac, but cardiovascular risk is actually pretty high in the two studies that were published. So the myocardial infarction risk was 0.2% in the placebo group and an increase to 0.3%. So
that was in the MACE 1.
In the MACE 1. In the MACE 2, actually, it was 0.8%.
Yeah. So it went up 50% increase over placebo in the first study, but it went up fourfold
in the second one.
And that was with the Evinity?
Yes, that was with the Evinity. And the stroke risk was similar. It went up from 0.3 to 0.2. So it's 50% increase in stroke risk as well. And so cardiovascular death risk increased from 0.4 to 0.5%.
The interesting thing is that the risk of cardiovascular events went up fourfold in the second study, but death did not. Death went up 50%, even though the risk of an event went up fourfold. So, you know, once more, women tend to have smaller, less fatal heart attacks, although in the setting of congestive heart failure, you can't afford to kill off any of your heart muscle.
Correct. So cardiovascular mortality rate increased quite a bit. Stroke risk in the second study, both heart attack and stroke risk doubled.
And I have to say, this provider kind of minimized that part of it. She said, oh, but that was just in the early studies and they couldn't reproduce it.
Well, that's why we gave you both of the MACE studies. The first one showed the smaller increase, and when they redid the study, the second one was the one that had the worst outcome. So second study did not debunk it. The second study accelerated it.
Very good. Very good. Okay. And,
life does not give us yes or no's,
the thing is, they started testing me for my heart stuff back in January, and I don't get the results. I wore a heart monitor for 3 weeks. because I have a little bit of a ventricular arrhythmia. And now I don't get my results until April 30th.
Why?
We don't have any providers. No tier one providers do you ever get to see. It's tier two, which I love them, and the PAs and the nurse practitioners.
Yeah.
And,
sweet human beings, but damn it, if I've got a life-threatening problem, I want an answer today. I don't want it in 2 or 3 months.
And where I used to work in Bellevue, that's the way it was. And I know people who live down here, and they still go back up to see Dr. Rodriguez at Overlake, and the great cardiologists, and that I know. it's very frustrating.
Back when I was a country doctor, if I suspected something and I ran a test, I would get the answer, and the day I got the answer, I would contact my subspecialty person. Like if it was a breast cancer, I would have already talked to my surgeon that night if I had to call him at home at 11 o'clock at night, and I'd explain the situation.
And when
I saw the woman the next morning and told her she had cancer, she went over to see the oncologist or the surgeon the same day.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's really pretty bad right now, Jerry. People can't get in to be seen even after they're discharged from the ICU or from the emergency room.
Oh,
it's just taking
I know.
Too long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My husband, I called you about my husband a couple of months ago. He had a bowel obstruction in November, and they said, you have no pre-existing causes, no adhesions, nothing like that. You need to see and be assessed for a malignancy in your small bowel.
Yes.
We just got in yesterday, 4 months later. He has an appointment, and now they're going to do the CT enterogram and all that stuff. But here we are sitting on a possible malignancy for 4 months in his small bowel. But we're praying and trusting God that God knows what's going on. But it is very frustrating.
Was that a pun? God knows what's going on?
Yeah,
I'm sure he does. But you know, God doesn't get bowel cancers. So, right.
But he knows when we have them.
Yes, he does. And I wish that somebody would tell us so we can do something about it.
She's trying.
I know she is. And that's the problem is there are times, and I have said this many times, there are times I feel the urge to apologize for my entire profession.
Well,
because it has gone to hell in the last couple of decades.
It's just difficult to get in, Jerry. There aren't that many providers, and more and more are retiring every year, especially after COVID. Many are retiring.
Yeah,
and
the ones who are
practicing do not want to move to Olympia.
No. Well, and the fact is that medicine has become so oppressive. You know, it is more and more paperwork and forms and computers and less and less patient contact. And there are more and more regulations and more clerks overlooking the doctor's shoulder and deciding what he can write, what he can't write, what he can describe, how often he can see the patient.
Absolutely.
That, you know, doctors are just getting fed up and quitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know. And that's been going on for a long, long time. But I will tell you, I appreciate your illuminating me a little more on these studies because I've been very resistant to Fosamax and all the other ones, and I've tried to do exercise, and that's how I found out I had heart failure. I'm in the gym trying to build up my muscle mass, right?
Yeah, and you're short of breath and exhausted. Episodes.
Yeah. So since you brought up Fosamax, you know, these drugs do not cause osteonecrosis of the jaw, but their cardiovascular side effect profile is more significant.
Yeah.
Yes. I really appreciate your knowledge, and I knew you were the ones to call.
Well, thank you, dear. We'll do our best, but you just got me frustrated this morning. That's all. Sometimes I don't know whether to spit, swear, or throw things. But,
you know. I do that to my husband sometimes too.
Poor guy.
Right. Well, thank you for the call, young lady.
We all take it out on the ones we love the most.
Yes.
You know, all our frustrations are dumped.
Well, that's because they'll put up with us.
Yeah, they'll still love us.
True.
That's true. Oh, Eileen, thank you for the call.
Thank you, my dear. Good luck.
Here's that number to get through, just like Eileen and Joe this morning, 800-465-8770. We're going to go to Tacoma, take a call from Casey, at least get the question, take a quick break, and then we'll talk about it when we come back. So, good morning, Casey. How are you this morning?
Well, good morning. I'm doing well, and I'm glad you've got this program going so that I can call in and ask a question.
Yay, you betcha.
Well, now let's see if we can give you a rational answer just for fun. Go ahead.
So you're not a politician then?
No.
Logical and rational are, you know, Dr. Mixon.
Once more, my political beliefs are very simple, and I'm going to repeat them for the thousandth time on the air. People who want to run their own lives, stay home and do so. People who want to run other people's lives seek public office. The left wants to run my life one way. The right wants to run my life a different way. What they have in common is they both think they're better qualified to run my life than I am, and I disagree. Real
that's
simple.
True. So, that's funny.
Agreement there.
Yes.
How can we help, Casey?
Yeah.
Well, I called a couple of weeks ago about a sister-in-law who had been diagnosed with Parkinson's. They later find out, well, they say she doesn't have Parkinson's, but in the meantime, the medication that she had been taking contributed to Parkinson's-like symptoms.
Yes,
well, right.
And tardive dyskinesia is my guess. Yeah.
Yeah. But right. One of the symptoms is excessive saliva. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard for her to control that at times when she has to use a Kleenex or a rag or something like that because there's just this excess of saliva being produced. And
yes.
What can be done about that?
All right, well, we'll talk about that when we get back from the break. The music is sweet and soft, but it's saying we got to go away for a minute or two. We'll be right back.
Yes, Casey, stay right there. And Steve, we're going to get to your call as well. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back.
Appropriate for this program.
Yeah.
Stay alive.
Yeah, and you don't sing that note, you kind of scream it.
Yeah. I don't get up that high. My vocal cords do not go there.
Your testosterone level keeps you down low.
The down low, babe.
Yes, it does. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Welcome back. Casey from Tacoma on the line talking about some of the effects that Parkinson's meds had on his sister-in-law, who then was diagnosed as not having Parkinson's.
After quite a while on the medications.
Yes, on all the meds.
And unfortunately, the medications can trigger what's called a tardive dyskinesia, in which you have trouble moving, you get very stiff and shuffle, and which sometimes clears on its own, but not always. So sometimes it is a permanent consequence of the medications. Yeah, the saliva problem, there are things we can do that will dry her up, but they have significant side effects themselves. They have cardiovascular side effects. They tend to stimulate the heart rate, even give people tremors at times. And here's a person who's already got Parkinson-like problems. But, you know, you can do things such as the sympathomimetics. These are the caffeine and speed-like drugs, the sort of drugs we would give to people with ADHD to help their focus. They also tend to dry up your mouth and dry your eyes, dry your mouth, dry all your secretions, in fact. But they also tend to speed you up. I mean, that's why the colloquial version for this whole class of drugs is speed. Because it makes you speedy. And they also have some addiction potential. The other classes of drugs that would tend to dry up would be the atropine-related sorts of medications. And once more there, they dilate your pupils, they make you light sensitive, you know, lots and lots of adverse effects. So yes, there are medicines that will dry, but the side effects of those medicines are also quite significant, and we're already suffering from significant side effects of a medicine. I get pretty hesitant to throw much more into the mix, but Dr. Umat is sitting here with a very inquisitive look on her face that says, I have an answer. So,
well, a suggestion. Okay. Botox. So a neurologist could probably do a Botox, medical Botox.
Good thought. I had not. Yeah, you're right. I had not.
It'd be temporary.
See, there's a reason I keep you around.
Yes, there's a reason. It's called job security for Dr. Umat. But besides that, I actually love what I do.
Yeah, no, she's right. You can actually damp down those glands with some localized Botox yeah. and then parietal glands and so
that's
on.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in neurology.
Not realized that. Yeah, I had not thought of that.
And that's medical indication. It's not a cosmetic indication. Neurologists can do that.
And so insurance would cover it.
Insurance would cover for it, yes.
Yeah. And the shots last about 2 to 3 months, mm-hmm. depending on how heavily they dose it, and which whether they're actually using the Botox or the Desport, or some of the Cogeners with it. Yeah, great idea, Samara. Thank you. Because I was feeling kind of bad about my answer. I like yours a whole lot better.
Well, I know one of the things that she says will really stimulate the flow of saliva are things like apples and oranges.
Mm.
And so I think, wonder if that's an acid, citric acid reaction.
Yes, it is. It's a little bit of acid which stimulates saliva even in normal people.
Right.
And in her, of course, it overstimulates.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you might have a visit a neurologist who indeed could do some Botox injections of her salivary glands.
You know, it's a pretty benign procedure, and it's temporary, and it's easy to do, and it's covered by insurance, and it will give her some relief.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, as far as some of her other symptoms, like with leg strength and arms and coordination, we've been into a bit of a routine with some walking and some weight training. Is that the right thing?
It is, and obviously coordination and balance exercises to the extent that she can do them safely. You know, we don't want her trying to stand on one leg and falling on her nose.
No. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to the extent that she can get next to a wall and put one hand on the wall and so on, and then take the hand off and see how well she keeps her balance, and then so she can get her hand right back there in a hurry.
Right.
So, yes, you know, practice is the best shot for this.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your contribution there.
You're welcome, sir. Take
Good
care.
Luck. Yes, Good thank luck, you for the call, friend. Casey.
Bye-bye.
It's so nice that people call for other family members, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Like, although I get the impression this is a neighbor or a friend rather than
a family. He's a sister-in-law.
Yes.
A sister-in-law,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's good that sister-in-law is a friend.
Yeah,
that's right. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and here is the number to get through with your question, too. It's 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Staying right here in the Kirkland area, near our beautiful Kirkland facility of longevity, we have Steve on the line. Good morning, Steve.
Oh, good morning. I have a question about I got a flyer in the mail about life screening tests for cardiology and bone mass and things like that, Lifeline.
Right.
I get them occasionally. Is that something worthwhile to consider doing? Is there any merit to it? What's the reason for sending it out? Are they fishing for business? I get it occasionally. Just
yes.
Wondering what it is.
Well, of course they're fishing for business. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know, if people don't know you have a service available, they can't do anything about it. That's why this radio show exists. Yeah. Yes. Lifeline Screening is a reputable group. They do Doppler studies. They look at your carotids, they look for aneurysms in your abdomen. They look at your peripheral vasculature. And they're basically looking for narrowings, areas that might put you at risk for strokes and so on. Their price is extremely modest.
Mm-hmm.
This is a study that before they came around and actually drove the prices down, used to be very expensive studies. And, they started doing it in mass for vast numbers of people and drove the price way, way down.
Mm.
So I think they do a great job of screening. Now, if they find something that looks worrisome, then I'd have you go see, a appropriate vascular person or so on to confirm it. And because they're not going to do any interventions, they're not going to fix it. But they are doing screenings to at least let you know whether or not they find a problem. And then you can go see your subspecialist to follow it up.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah, very good. And I also wanted to put a plug in for your book. I got your book, Lifelong. It's fantastic. I can't get enough of it. It's wonderful. I read it and reread it. So, it's chock full of really good information.
I had fun writing it, actually. And as soon as I can get time to breathe, I've got about three others I'd like to knock out.
I met him on Wednesday morning, and he goes, "I want no more new projects." "Don't give me any more work," he said.
Yeah.
That was Tuesday, and already.
And by Friday, I got two
more.
Yeah,
you've already got three more,
My lifelong pattern has been I take on project after project after project, and I get it so that I'm running as fast as I can run until I get totally exhausted and I've got to have a break. And I take a week off and go somewhere and just decompress. And swear I'm going to cut back and take it easy. And I do for a month or so.
Okay.
and then it starts building up and building up. I'm an obsessive projector. I can't help it.
And I don't build stuff. Away. I make sure I keep seeing you and giving you more homework.
That's right. So,
but your projects come from other places, too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
There's just so much to be done in this life. I'm confident that the day I drop dead, I will have six half-finished projects.
And we'll have to finish those, Dr. Umat.
Indeed.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, well. But I don't plan to drop dead for a while.
No.
I got an 11-year-old at home who I am determined to be here from when she finishes graduate school. And right now she's in the sixth grade. So.
There you go.
Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful. I look forward to any new books and love your show. So thank you so much.
Oh,
thank you,
sir. Steve. Thank you for calling in.
Bye-bye.
And I looked up Lifeline Screening just to see how much it was. It really is.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's like $149, and then if you want more tests for men or women, it goes up to $249.
Yeah.
But
over the years, I've had many patients bring me those results, and it is just that it is a screen, but nonetheless, it points to something majorly wrong, and then you can kind of follow through. Like you said, Jerry, they won't do anything about it, but they'll give you the information.
Kind of like the Galleri test for screening cancers.
That's right.
This one is for something else.
This is for vascular issues.
Vascular, okay.
And, back when I first became aware of them, of course, in those days, it was like $119 or something. And, it's going up with inflation, obviously.
Yeah.
But the price is still quite modest for the extensive studies they do. And their competition with the hospitals and with the imaging centers has driven the price down for almost everybody. Mm. But the only people that still keep super high prices are the hospitals if you're admitted or you show up at the emergency room.
Yeah.
You get gouged for enormous amounts of money for the same test that these guys will do for almost nothing.
Mm.
So, go.
There you go.
Yeah, so feel free to get your screen. No, I don't own stock in the company.
No, not this week.
I have no connection with them. You're right, I probably should go out and buy some. Now that I've pushed it, I should go out and buy some stock.
Oh, boy. All right, well, we are going to take a break here. And we will be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. We hope you'll stay tuned. And if you've got questions, here is that number to call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We're going to talk about what longevity can do for you or a parent, like Joe, who called in earlier, wanted to know about his parent. Is it a good thing for him? Yes, it is. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there.